There's another new play on Broadway that aims to shock, figuratively as well as almost literally. It's called In the Next Room, or The Vibrator Play, and it's about exactly that. It's set in the 1880s, at the beginning of the electric age. This was a time when some doctors were actually using electric vibrators to treat women with emotional troubles. But their treatment was about as unsexy as can be. Here's a scene from In the Next Room.
Mrs. Daldry, we are going to produce in you what is called a paroxysm. The congestion in your womb is causing your hysterical symptoms, and if we can release some of that congestion and invite the juices downwards, your health will be restored. Now, thanks to the dawn of electricity. Yes, thank you, Mr. Edison. I always tip my hat to Mr. Edison, great American. I have a new instrument which I will use.
I'm afraid...
3 minutes, sometimes 5 at the outer limits. Are you ready, Mrs. Daldry?
The good doctor's young wife soon gets curious about what's going on in his office, and, naturally, one thing leads to another. The play is by Sarah Rule, one of the most promising young playwrights working today. She won a MacArthur Fellowship a few years ago and has earned a reputation for creating whimsical, learned, imaginative theater pieces. But for this play, the real experiences of Victorian women were a truth stranger than fiction. And parents, just a heads up, our segment does include some frank talk about sex.
This is the hysterical thing about it to me, is that they didn't think it was sexual at all. And in fact, it was once people realized women got sexual pleasure from vibrators that they became banned and were illegal and went underground. But in the 19th century, they just thought they were clinical medical devices.
It makes you wonder if there's anything today that we don't understand is that we will in 10 or 20 or 30 years ban because it's so outré.
Yes.
Are there contemporaneous accounts by women about these treatments?
Interestingly, no. I mean, we don't have the women's voices about it. The treatments I read about were mostly from the doctor's point of view.
So why do we know that maybe they weren't achieving orgasm? Maybe it was something else entirely.
Well, they called it a paroxysm.
Yeah.
And they didn't have words for it quite. It's very interesting.
And although, as you suggest, one of the characters in the play, the nursemaid, the mm-hmm. wet nurse, talks about having that kind of experience during sexual congress.
Yeah, so she says she's heard that, you know, some women have those symptoms when having relations with their husbands. Yes, it's true. I mean, I think individual women might have had more or less sexual pleasure without maybe being able to describe it. But, I mean, in a way, it's a fascinatingly... the fact that bedrooms were so hidden would have in some ways made it be a more exciting place to not have language for
yes,
these things.
I guess. Well, and that's the origin of the word obscene, right, is that which happens off stage, you know?
Oh, that's right. Very good.
And as you spent time in this Victorian era, did you come away thinking that we still have vestiges of specifically Victorian ideas and behavior that we haven't rid ourselves of?
Well, I'm so interested in how in the 19th century people were so compartmentalized and their emotional selves and their bodily selves weren't kind of put together. They were really separated out into separate rooms, as it were. And I think that now we have pornography and pornography is so mainstream. So in a sense, sex is everywhere. It's on every billboard. You can't escape it. But that doesn't necessarily mean that the gap is closed.
And the complications inherent in that, and that it is in the nature of sort of civilized people when sex and love and intimacy are involved, that it's going to be occasionally messed up and unsatisfying?
Yes, exactly. So I think the question of intimacy is still very much alive.
While actual 19th century vibrators are front and center, the play also deals with all kinds of problematic intimacy, relationships between husbands and wives, women and their newborns, and women and other women. Sarah, you have a character in the show who's black and a nursemaid. She's just lost her own baby, and she's been hired to breastfeed the new baby of this doctor's family. Why did you want to include this character?
I was interested in anything to do with the 19th century that you wouldn't read in the pages of Charlotte Bronte, anything that had been pushed to the side. So I was interested in these wet nurses, who are these really sort of tragic figures who are so common then, and now it's been kind of banished from our memory. We have amnesia about it. It seems so strange to us. But at the time, it was perfectly common if you were a privileged white person to farm out that activity to someone else, maybe someone who was Irish, maybe an African American, maybe a recent immigrant, but often at great cost to these women's own children. And I think the other connection I was trying to make was to do with this notion of paying someone else for a very intimate labor that really, you know, one would like to do oneself, you know, in the same way that the doctor is providing this intimate service for these women.
No, and I wondered in that sense, in terms of how are we to like or not so different from people then. I think of the sort of, among us well-to-do people today, the kind of automatic subcontracting of so much parenting to nannies.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we as in the audience can say, oh, look at how they treated their black servant. Oh, look at the fact that these lesbians could not express their love. Oh, look at this, the central fact of the play, this crazy thing.
Mm-hmm.
I wondered, are we all sitting there thinking, aren't we smug and wonderful here in the 21st century?
Well, I really hope not. And it's interesting to me that a lot of the audiences who experience some level of discomfort, it's during those moments of intimacy, like when two women kiss on stage. I've heard, you know, some members of the audience say, oh, lesbians. And I thought, oh, my God, you know, is this where we're at? I mean, we are at a time where we're in a cultural crisis about whether two women can get married. So I don't feel that a contemporary Broadway audience is smug about it at all.
Do you find that people are sometimes uncomfortable with the central idea that just seeing women having orgasms depicted on stage?
Oddly enough, no. That they're just delighted by that usually. And delighted when, I don't want to spoil it, but when a man gets the treatment, they seem delighted by that.
Those are the big laughs, the really right. Big laughs.
Right. I didn't expect that. I mean, who knew that a man having an anal paroxysm was such a source of great delight to such a large percentage of the population?
Is that a phrase that existed at the time, anal paroxysm?
I don't know, but I do know that the Chattanooga vibrator was invented for that purpose. And
really?
And people, you know, like...
The Chattanooga vibrator.
Chattanooga. And Henry James, I think, had the treatment and some other luminaries.
He should have had more. Your suburban Chicago upbringing with what sounds like extremely literate, loving parents sounds idyllic. And I'm wondering if you ever wondered or worried as a young artist that you didn't have enough misery and drama in your life to be a great artist.
I do think misery came to me naturally, you know, without having a terrible upbringing. I really had, wonderful, wonderful parents. I lost my dad when I was probably too young, and I think, you know, my play Eurydice came out of that loss. But I don't know, artists just seem to gravitate towards misery, even with the happiest of childhood. I've always thought that sort of... that novelists in particular, as a category, often have very happy childhoods, but think of them as having been so miserable. And I have a whole spiel about genres and unhappy childhoods.
Really? Go on.
No, it's, I'll save it
so
for
you. You think, for instance, novelists have objectively happy childhoods that they think of as being grotesque?
That was my terrible generalization, that poets actually do have terrible fathers or something.
Hmm. There's a self-help pamphlet that you could give around to MFA programs out of this, I think. What are you working on now?
I had a commission from the Goodman Theater in Chicago, where I'm from, and I was fascinated by actors kissing on stage and what that was, the phenomenon night after night to have to kiss the same person, whether you like them, whatever mood you were in. So it's called Stage Kiss, and it's basically about actors kissing on stage.
That sounds great.
It was very fun to write because I had to write a play within a play for them to perform. So
is that more comic than not?
Yes, I'm afraid so.
Good. I can't wait to see it.
you.
Sarah Rule, thanks very much.
Thanks for having me.
In the Next Room, or The Vibrator Play, is on Broadway now.